This tape is produced and distributed by the Christian Biblical Church of God, Post Office Box 1442, Hollister, California, zip code 95024. We're going to start a series which will be a combination of surveying and intensive study in the Word of God. And we're going to ask the question, what is happening in the church today in relationship to what happened in the church in the first century? Now let's go to the book of Ecclesiastes, because there are some things here which, here's a principle which is very important for us to understand. Ecclesiastes, the first chapter. Okay, let's pick it up here in verse 9. One of the reasons that we're going to do this is so that we can understand what is happening today. Why is Christianity, all forms of it, being assaulted everywhere by the same forces that want to destroy Christianity? And are those the same forces that sought to destroy and pervert Christianity in the first century? And we're going to see, yes, that it is. And it's based upon this, verse 9, Ecclesiastes 1. The thing that has been is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. There is no new thing under the sun. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It has been already of old time, which was before us. And there is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be remembrance of the things which are to come with those which shall come after. And that's the whole basis of what is happening today. Now, let's go to Revelation, the second and third chapter. Because we need to pick up our understanding with this, and we need to understand that the enemy against Christianity is the same. Let's ask the question as we're turning to Revelation 2 and 3. Is Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever? Answer, yes. Therefore, is there anything new under the sun with Jesus Christ? No, there is not. As far as Christ is concerned. Okay? Are the enemies of God the same? Yes. Now, there's a particular enemy of the people of God that unfortunately have put themselves in a society into such a stranglehold position that everyone is virtually afraid to say one word against them. And unfortunately, they have put themselves into a position where they are trying to remake and redo and destroy Christianity into what they think is the proper religion of theirs. Now, in Revelation 2, we find in two of the church eras, in Smyrna and Philadelphia, we find that there is a confrontation with a specific group of people called, verse 9 of Revelation 2, the synagogue of Satan. Now, the word synagogue is used rather than church. And synagogue has a special meaning of a coming together. Synagogue is also a place of worship. So we are dealing with those who worship Satan openly. And of course, there are varying degrees of this. Varying degrees. And I'll bring you information on that as we go along. Then we come to the church at Philadelphia, and again we find concerning the synagogue of Satan, which ties us right in toward the end of the church age. Revelation 3 and verse 9, it says, behold, now let's go back to verse 8, Revelation 3, because it will show what we should be doing. Okay? I know your works. Behold, I've set before you an open door, and no man can shut it, for you have a little strength, and you have kept my word, and have not denied my name, which in itself is another whole study. So we're dealing with people then, on the one hand, who really keep the word of God, versus the world, which is verse 9, Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say that they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before your feet, and to know that I have loved you, because you have kept the word of my patience, which is the opposite of getting rid of sound doctrine, which is the opposite of changing things to fit the world. Because you have kept the word of my patience, I will keep you from the hour of temptation or tribulation, which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. So we have the phenomena of the run-in again of the synagogue of Satan right at the end of the time. And I'm going to read to you certain things of what they are saying today, certain things the way that the Jews look at things, or and I will call it Judaism, lest someone think I'm an anti-Semite. They never stop and ask the question, why are the Jews anti-Christian? No one has asked that. Why should they be allowed to take prayer out of public schools? Why should they be allowed to destroy the name of Jesus Christ? Why should they be allowed to control all of the media and control everything that goes in it? And that we cannot point out the fact of what is being done. Okay, let's go to Luke, the 4th chapter, and let's see something that is true. Now, a lot of these things, since it is a mystery that is being done, since a lot of it is done within the inner circles at the higher echelon, we cannot find that they hang a label on themselves saying, we are the synagogue of Satan. You can't find that. So you have to identify them by their fruits. Now let's go here to Luke, the 4th chapter, and let's see one aspect of the temptation of Jesus Christ by Satan the devil. Verse 5 of Luke 4, And the devil, taking him up into a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said to him, All this power will I give you, and the glory of them, for it is delivered unto me, and whomsoever I will, I give it. If, here's the qualification to receive the rulership of the world, if therefore you will worship me, all shall be yours. Have you ever wondered why the rich just get more filthy rich? Okay? The rich, powerful of this world are those who have met this qualification that Satan has set down, that they worship him. Various forms of it. Some, I believe, in the highest echelons of the synagogue of Satan, knowingly and openly worship Satan. There are those who worship various forms of other gods and angels, so-called, and demons. Okay? Now let's go to Revelation 12. And I want to call your attention to a book. Now, in this whole series, I'm going to mention books that I recommend that you read, because it's very important for you to do the reading. One of the best books to read is En Route to Global Occupation. I have mentioned that a couple of times before, which is explaining the whole basis of the one world rulership that we are seeing coming on the scene today, which is actively coming in a form that we didn't think would come. Who would ever think 40 years ago that the United Nations would begin having the power it does today? I mean, you think about that. Okay? I want you to tie in where Satan said, if you will worship me, all of this will be yours. I want you to tie in Revelation 17 and 18 in relationship to the great Babylonian system that is coming. I want you to think of the whole one world system that is developing. I want you to think of the mark of the beast that is going to come and is going to be very, very effective. And I want you to put that all together when I'm reading Revelation 12 and verse 9. Okay? And realize that there is an active, ongoing enemy who wants to destroy us any way he can. By subversion without, through immorality and drugs, or whatever. From subversion within to the changing of doctrine to the carrying off of church leaders in vanity and stupidity to get them to spend their money on things they ought not do. And I don't limit that to just one or two church leaders you may or may not know. Okay? Because it has happened in every Christian church and with determination and forethought to make it happen on the part of Satan, the devil, and also on the part of the synagogue of Satan, as we will see. Okay? I want you to also consider, as we're going through this, the conformity to the world that the world wants you to have. And understand that that has not come from God. So that's why this is going to be a broad general thing that we are going to do and a very detailed study, a combination of both, so that we can see that true Christianity and the true church of God was never, and I will repeat, never based upon Judaism. We need to understand that thoroughly because the whole move in the world today is to say that Christianity was just a sect of Judaism. And so therefore, we need to go back to Judaism. Do we not see that in the Church of God today? How many little churches of God have gone to sacred names, have gone to a 15th Passover, have gone to circumcision, have gone to the rules and regulations of the Jews? Okay, now we need to understand that in this religious battle, to bring Judaism to the fore again, I need to call your attention to a sermon I did about 2 years ago called The Jewish Messiah and the Noahide Laws. Okay, and so if you want those, then you can write me and ask for them. And also the other one, Antichrist, who, where? And we need to, in bringing up about Antichrist, ask a very simple question. Are we going to allow the Antichrist to muzzle what we preach? Now, they're doing it already. Part of it is you can't say anything against homosexuals. There's a man in Colorado, his name is Pete Peters, and he's pastor of a Christian church, Sunday keeping, howbeit, but just to demonstrate the vehemence and hatred against Christ. He put out a booklet entitled, Homosexuals Deserve the Death Penalty. So says the Bible. Well, needless to say, when the whole establishment and the gay, so-called, it's really sad, and death community, got a hold of that, you know what happened. He was also one of the ones that was actively involved in helping get passed in Colorado the law which says homosexuals cannot have special rights. So what they did, they came down and issued him a subpoena and arrested him and said, you must register as a political action committee, which means that you now must open all your books so we will know who all your donors are and everything. He says, I refuse to do that. Well, then you're going to have to pay a penalty of so much per day until you sign this political action disclosure thing. And he said, we are a church, and I'm standing on the freedom of speech, and I'm standing on the freedom of religion. Well, when he was gone on a trip after the penalty accumulated several thousand dollars, and they found, and they had been watching this little church building, they decided they're going to go down and confiscate the whole building and everything in it. So they went down, closed off by order of the court and the sheriff, closed off that church, went in and seized all of the assets of that church, froze the money in their bank account. And put yellow tape around of it, no trespassing, property of the state of Colorado. So they came back, they cut off the ribbons, walked into the little church, and prayed to God and said, God, help us in this. We know this is your battle. Now we can learn a good lesson from that, that anyone who is for Christ is not against him, even though they don't keep the Sabbath and that sort of thing. Well, to make a long story short, it got very embarrassing because now the public was on Pastor Peter's side, okay? And what happened was they stood their ground, and the sheriff would be out there with the big bully men out front, you know, a lot more mild than the ATF fiasco they had down in Waco or the Weaver case they had up in Idaho. But believe me, these are just signs of things to come because Satan is the enemy and he uses the government to come after us, okay? We need to understand that. So what we're going to talk about here has great ramifications for today, as well as we will see why the church went through such absolute vehement hatred when it began. And we're not dealing with people that will just lick their wounds and go away. We are dealing with hatred over a historical sense to seek out, subvert, and destroy in any way that can be done. Well, what happened was it got, and I heard a couple of tapes that Pete Peterson gave, so I know what I'm talking about. I've read some of the things that he put out, so I know the whole story. I can't give the whole story here. But needless to say, they finally won out, and they won out on the day that they had the church and all of its equipment up for auction to pay for the fine. Okay? 20,000 people turned out for that auction. And there was not one bid for any of the property to pay for the fine. They said, well, Pastor Peters, you just signed this release. He says, I'm not signing anything. So the state, totally embarrassed, bid for the property, for the amount of the fine, and consigned it back to the church. But that just shows you what can happen. Okay? I want us to think about this verse here, Revelation 12 and verse 9. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil, and Satan, which is deceiving, as it should read, the whole world. He is deceiving the whole world. And it is going to be something else. He was cast out unto the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accuses them before our God day and night. Now, you know why you need grace all the time? There's one of the reasons right there. Okay. Is Satan after us? Yes, he is. Are there times when he's more active to come after people than at other times? Yes, there are. And we're coming into the forefront of a time when it will be again. Okay? And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto death. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth, for the devil has come down unto you, having great wrath. Now this is a time just in the future, because he knows that he has but a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child, and we're down into the just before the beginning of the great tribulation right there. Okay? So we are just a little ahead of this time as far as the persecution against the church. But it is going to come. And it's going to come from the sources that control the government. Now, let me also recommend, if you don't have this book and you have not read it, recommend The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. Let me mention here that The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion was a secret document which was somehow made public, which lays out the Zionist 100-year plan going back to about 75, 74, somewhere right in there, okay? And their plan to take over the world. You can get those books from, I'll let you know where to get those books. You can get them from Des Griffin up in Midnight Messenger up in Clackamas, Oregon. He has that. Now, I want to warn you that the Jews deny that they wrote this, okay? Which if you do something that's real evil, you always deny that you do it, right? But there it lays out the step-by-step plan to take over all governments of the world by having a dead economy, to take over all the media of the world by controlling all access to radio. Of course, they didn't know at that time it would be radio, but all the printed word. And they're now control all the movies, all the television, all of the big media sources in the world. So you need to read that. It's going to be gruesome and hair-raising because we're living in the time of the fulfillment of almost every one of those things that was written over 100 years ago. Plus, I have an atlas, a Jewish atlas, which openly admits that Zionism wrote the protocols. Okay? We do not, brethren, really fully comprehend the impact that Jesus Christ had on Judaism. Nor do we understand that they would wait centuries to execute their wrath. Now, we don't think like that. Okay? This is not to condemn, and I want to make a statement here, this is not to condemn every Jew that lives. I want you to know that. But this is to condemn those who are and to warn you of those who are of the synagogue of Satan. Okay? Now, there are probably many, just as many good, innocent, if we could put it that way, in the world, Jews who have their businesses, who go about their lives in a lawful and a legal and a proper and a, you know, good way, just as well as there are of many, many other people. Okay, and in fact, some of the we were listening to some music today on the way up. It was from the soundtrack from the movie The Last of the Mohicans. Wonderful music written by a Jew. Terrific. Marvelous. Okay, so please understand that this is not an anti-Semitic thing. But I want you to also understand that if we don't know who our enemies are and we don't understand what is happening to us, how can we possibly know what's going on? How can we possibly try and understand what is happening in the world to every single form of Christianity? Now, If you think I'm a bigot, then okay, say I'm a bigot. But then you, on the other hand, you be fair, and you go out and you look at what's happening in the world, and you honestly trace it all down to its source. And you're going to be surprised. Okay? Now, I want to read to you from a book which I don't think is any longer in print. It's called Judaism and the Vatican, which, by the way, can be gotten from Emissary Publications. I got it right here. Nope, this is their old Pasadena address. Sorry about that. Emissary Publication, Midnight Messenger, up in Clackamas, Oregon. I'll be sure and get it to you. Maybe leave a little time at the end of the tape and put it at the end of the tape for you here when I can get the address when I get back home. Okay? This book is very interesting. Judaism and the Vatican. Okay? And I would dare say that hardly anyone who is listening to this tape has ever really studied anything honestly about Judaism. Now, I'm also going to mention a book that I have, and I'll make some copies available because I got three extra copies, which is The Code of Jewish Law. How many have ever read anything concerning the Code of Jewish Law? Well, I know some few here have. You cannot understand Judaism unless you know the Code of Jewish Law. There's no way you can. Nor can you properly understand the book of Romans. And that's what's the matter with the Protestants, you see. They don't know about Judaism. Okay? Now, as I've mentioned before, the biggest problem in the world for a Jew is Jesus Christ. I don't care if he's an atheist. I don't care if he's an Orthodox, a Reform, or a conservative. And the biggest reason it is the biggest problem for them is because Jesus Christ did exist, and Jesus Christ did come, and the biggest lie that has ever been believed were the lies, the whole bundle of things put out by the Jews, that Jesus did not come, that he was the bastard son of illegitimate marriage, that he did not die, and his disciples stole the body away, which is believed unto this day. I draw your attention to the movie called Jesus Christ Superstar, which was written and produced by a Jew, which was a denigration of Jesus Christ, who supposedly married Mary Magdalene. Okay? The way they try and do away with Jesus Christ is to denigrate him everywhere that they can. To destroy his name, to impugn any Christian religion anywhere. And I want you to understand that Jews do not believe that anyone other than a Jew should keep the Sabbath and the holy days. You need to understand that. Now, if you come and keep them with a Jew, that's okay. Now, let me read here from the book on page 127 in the section called Portrait of a Jew, Judaism in the Vatican. I've written elsewhere that as adolescents and later as young men, we refuse to take seriously the persistence of nations. We lived in enthusiastic expectation of a new age, such as the world has never known before, signs of which we thought we could already detect. The death, which had certainly begun, of religions, families, and nations. Now, why is a new age coming in at a time when they're saying the family is destroyed, nations ought to give up their sovereignty? So that's the whole new age that is coming. We had nothing but anger, scorn, and irony for the diehards of history who clung to their residues. That is, clung to the residue of Christianity. Do Christians realize what the name of Jesus, their God, can mean for a Jew? For a Christian, even an atheist, it evokes, or at least has evoked at some time, a definite or a being infinitely good who offers himself as the good, who desires at least to carry on the torch of all bygone philosophies and all morals. For the Christian who is still a believer, Jesus epitomizes and fulfills the better part of himself. The Christian who has ceased to believe no longer takes the ideal seriously. He may even resent it, even accuse the priest of incompetency or even of deception, but though he denounces it as an illusion, that is the fantasies of Christianity, he generally leaves no doubt as to the grandeur and beauty of that illusion. To the Jew who still believes and professes his own religion, Christianity is the greatest theological and metaphysical usurpation in history. It is a spiritual scandal of subversion and blasphemy. That's how they view Christianity. To this day, even Messianic Jews are not allowed to live in Israel. They are expelled by order of the court. To all Jews, even if they are atheists, the name of Jesus is a symbol of a threat, of that great threat that has hung over their heads for centuries and which may at any moment burst forth in catastrophes of which we know neither the cause nor the prevention. And I might mention here that the Jews do not recognize any single problem that they have had in the way of lying and cheating and stealing and robbery and subversion and all of these things, because they are done to further their cause, so therefore they are perfectly all right to do. That's why it's important that you understand that in the Talmud it says it's all right to kill a Gentile. It's all right to lie to a Gentile. It's all right to steal from a Gentile. It is all right to destroy his nation, to destroy his family, and all of that. Now, you won't find that in the code of Jewish law, but you will find some very important things to understand about Judaism. So we are dealing with an implacable enemy of God. I want you to understand that. And if you think that is anti-Semitism, then what you need to do is don't take the emotional reaction that most people have been programmed into doing since World War II, and that is you don't dare say anything against the Jews. Why don't you just take the situation to honestly look into it and see if it's true or not? Okay? That name is part of the accusation, absurd and frenzied, but is so effectively cruel that makes social life barely livable. That name has, in fact, come to be one of the signs, one of the names of the immense apparatus that surrounds the Jew, condemns him, and excludes him. I hope my Christian friends will forgive me, that they may better understand. Let me say that to the Jews, their God, in a way, the devil, if, as they say, the devil is a symbol and essence of all evil on the earth, iniquitous and all-powerful, incomprehensible, and bent on crushing helpless human beings. So that's what we're dealing with the Jewish mentality. In another place in this book, I want to read what they have tried to do down through the centuries to cleanse Christianity. Okay? To make Christianity, no, I won't. I'll leave that for another time. I want to read something really current. Here is an ad, which is in Biblical Review Magazine, Volume 10, Number 1, February 1993. I want you to see how they view Christianity today, ongoing, in their own writing, in their own advertisement. It reads thus, and this is by Richard K. Finn. The title of the article is Holocaust as a Pathological Act of Secularization. Okay, and it's from the American Interfaith Institute. Is the Christian gospel any longer morally credible? Why have we had all these underminings of Christian belief and everything? Okay? Such an ongoing way. In the post-Shoah world, now Shoah is the event of the Holocaust. Okay? And there are great disputations over to how many Jews actually died in the Holocaust. And someone asked me about that one time, and I said, well, there may very well have been 6 million Jews who were killed. And I don't mind them having a memorial to those who died. But I will not set foot in until they also acknowledge the tens of millions that were killed by the Soviets and the Ukrainians who were starved to death, the hundreds, who knows how many millions, killed by the communist Chinese, those in the other things that were done. When they acknowledge that, then fine, I'll set foot in it. But otherwise, it becomes a propaganda vehicle to put a guilt trip on all people. That's exactly what it's for. So that you don't dare raise your voice against anything that is done by the Jews. Okay? In the post-Shoah world, many Christian spokespersons have expressed a readiness to rethink Christian teachings to avoid Christian supersessionalism, which means that Christianity superseded Judaism. And when a critic from within the Christian community raises a moral question concerning concrete Christian teachings, that is, Christological teaching, he or she is usually dismissed as a radical who is undermining the faith. It is as if the critic were on trial. But is it not rather that the entire Christian message, that is what is on trial? If such dismissals are to be accepted, where is there any hope for the kind of Christian change that may help prevent future Holocausts? Now, what is the change they are wanting? They're wanting Christians to admit that the Jews didn't kill Christ. And that the Christian religion is responsible for all the persecution against the Jews. Okay? Now, here's a quote from Rabbi Eliezer Berkowitz. Christianity's New Testament has been the most dangerous anti-Semitic tract in history. Its hatred-charged diatribes against the Pharisees and the Jews have poisoned the minds and hearts of millions and millions of Christians for almost two millennia now. No matter what the deeper theological meaning of the hate passages against the Jews might be in the history of the Jewish people, the New Testament lent its inspiring support to opposition, persecution, and mass murder of an intensity and duration that were unparalleled in the entire history of man's degradation. Without Christianity's New Testament, Hitler's Mein Kampf could never have been written. Jewish thinking today. Okay? Now, here's another article. And this one is from Biblical Archaeology, February 1993. The title of this one is Paul and Judaism, Five Puzzles. And it goes through to show, purportedly, that Christianity is only a branch out of Judaism. Now, what we're going to do in this study is to show that true Christianity never had a part of what is real Judaism. But in fact, Christianity of the world did come out of Judaism. Okay? Let me read just a couple of statements here. If conversion means changing religions, i.e. moving from one religion to another, then Paul was not a convert. Now, this is what is going on in so-called Christian theological circles today. This is because Judaism and Christianity were not yet viewed as separate religions in the 50s of the first century when Paul wrote his letters, and we're going to see what happened in the 50s and why the New Testament was written within a period, except the books of John and Revelation, within a period of about 12 years. Most people don't realize that. The whole New Testament was written, with the exception of perhaps Jude and the Gospel of John, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and Revelation. The whole New Testament was written within a period of about 12 years, from 50 A.D. to about 63 A.D., 12, 13, 14 years. And we're going to understand the great and immense miracle it is that we have the New Testament. Okay? So the 50s, I want you to remember that. When Paul wrote his letters, people still looked on Christians as a particular kind of a Jew. Paul never disavowed his Judaism. That's not the way I read the New Testament. Paul tries to help Gentile Christians locate themselves in God's people with reference to Jewish Christians and other Jews. The problems that he encountered are, for the most part, Gentile Christian problems. Not so. Has there been a revision? Has there been a revision of history? Is the history of the United States trying to be revised today? Yes. Well, there's a revision of Christian history going on, okay? Christianity, of course, had its roots in Judaism. The Messiah lived and died on this earth as an observant Jew. He was a Jew, but what was he? A Pharisaical observing Jew. Moreover, Gentiles were familiar with Judaism and Jewish ways as an associate member of the synagogue's God-fearers. Okay. There are currently some people today who used to be members of the main affiliation we were members of, who have since left and set up their own religion, who openly say and advocate that Jesus Christ was a practicing, ordained, Orthodox, Pharisaical Rabbi. Have the infiltrations of Judaism had an impact upon Christianity? Yes, indeed. And their goals are to seek out and pervert, or to wholly paganize, or to destroy. And that, brethren, is the doctrine of Balaam. You pervert them through immorality, you pervert them through false doctrine, or you bring them back into the bondage of Judaism, one of the three. So what we're going to do, we're going to do this series, and I give this background, and if I gave you all the background that I've done to prepare for this, reading this book, which I've done a couple of times, reading, if you have the book called The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah by Alfred Edersheim, now I know it's tough reading, but you read it, okay? It is tough reading. You may be able to only hack a couple of pages a day, okay? But in there contains everything which shows the roots of Judaism and worldly Christianity.